Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
And it's time for the Friday gathering, and I'm joined in the studio by Green Party Senator Pauline O'Reilly, Pádraig Tobin, leader of AIM2 and TD for Meath West, Christina Finn, political correspondent at thejournal.ie, and Dermot O'Leary, who's General Secretary of the National Bus and Rail Union. Thanks everybody for coming in today. I want to start, Pauline, with this news that we hear tents are potentially going up in Dundrum. This is the site of the Central Mental Hospital. The proposal is to house 176 asylum seekers there. Also, the Irish Times reporting that Colum Barracks in Mullingar would be ready to take 200 Ukrainians. This is in the coming weeks. Now, we had Ireland's Human Rights Commissioner Sinead Gibney here, and she was talking about lurching from crisis to crisis, no long-term plan to deal with this. And she's saying that the clock is ticking on finding a long-term solution to this because of all of the problems that come, that we've seen with the protests, etc., and people having to stay in tents on the streets. Do you accept that a year plus after the start of the war in Ukraine, we don't have a plan in place?
I mean, the reality is that Ireland is taking in the same number, you know, on average, that other countries are taking across the European Union. And so it is, I suppose, a normal amount. But what we have had over the last couple of decades is an accommodation crisis. And that is continuing, even though some of it is, you know, it is being reversed to a certain extent. And so Minister O'Gorman is looking for accommodation on an ongoing basis. But we do need to have accommodation sorted. Now, in terms of the tented accommodation, it'll be done in the same kind of way as Gormanstown for a 3-month period. We did have there was a backlog of not having accommodation for 600. Today, that's down to 61. So it's the lowest since February.
Mm-hmm. And so using student accommodation over the summer as well.
Using student accommodation over the summer as well.
But then what happens in September?
Well, there is a plan. There is a plan there to actually build by the end of the year so that there will be, you know, I suppose, our own accommodation.
Where?
I don't have the details of exactly where that is, but there are now
is that
plans,
modular accommodation? There are
now,
or?
There are now plans that can happen. So we will have to watch the space. But I mean, I think everybody recognises that there was an emergency, that Ireland has taken in 90,000, that wasn't expected, that there would be a war breaking out in Ukraine. And we are doing... we are doing our best. I think that Irish people in general, I mean, there's certainly, you mentioned protests, there's a lot of places where there's absolutely no protests or minimal.
So Pádraig Tobin really depends. Beside you there shaking his head as you're talking about the building project that we're expecting.
Yeah, look, we were told last March that the modular homes would be up and running last October, and there isn't a modular home standing yet, which is quite incredible. We know that the government identified 500 buildings last April and only about 10 of those were ever brought into use. I put in a parliamentary question and Roderick O'Gorman's department bought 32 buildings and only 3 of those buildings are in use. 85% of the pledges that were made for Ukrainian to be brought into private homes were never activated whatsoever. So on that side of things, it has been pretty much a disaster. But also in the application process...
Those were not all suitable. To be fair, those were not all suitable. And I don't think that anybody can accuse, you know, the minister of not doing his utmost to try and bring everything into use.
It is not an
overnight solution. And 85%, we have
the government shouldn't be using the sentence overnight, honestly. It's just been so overused in terms of housing and healthcare. And now it's been used in terms of the refugee crisis as well. The other side of this problem right now is the application process too. The application process is taking far too long. There's 14,000 people in the application process for their first decision, which means that, you know, we're housing people that, you know, are economic migrants as well as real asylum seekers. We know that there's about 3,800 people who have had deportation orders, who have never been deported from this country.
Where did you get those figures from?
PQs, parliamentary questions to Roderick O'Gorman's and for the Minister for Justice. So between 2018 and last year, there were 4,300 people who received deportation orders.
Now, you said 3,800 there.
Yeah. And a small amount of those were actually deported. And the rest weren't deported. The government actually said in the parliamentary question back to me that they don't know whether they left the country or not. We have a voluntary deportation system in this country, which makes no sense when we're under such pressure in terms of housing the people. Like, I want to see a compassionate response, but I also want to see a common sense response. And we're missing the common sense
as
well.
What are you saying, Dermot?
I think part of the problem for Pauline and her colleagues in government is that the old adage you're explaining, you're losing. And I'm not denying the fact that there are issues. We know there are issues. But I suppose, you know, Taoiseach was on the Daily Show a number of weeks ago, and he was asked a very direct question about the population explosion, as he called it. And is there not enough room in this country? And there's plenty of room, but there is economically plenty of room. Infrastructurally, there's not plenty of room. That's the problem. And the lack of social housing on one side is causing those tensions to boil up in certain areas. So there is issues, and the delivery of social housing is making an awful difference here.
But do you accept, Dermot, that, you know, as Pauline says, the government are dealing with a crisis situation? Nobody could have predicted the war in Ukraine. I know we're over a year since it started, but it is a very difficult position that the government is in.
No, I accept that. And look, Pauline talks about a 20-year crisis. I mean, and again, we're back to explaining that. Yes, we did have an economic crash back in 9 and 10 and 11. That happened. But the speed of putting infrastructure in place, it's not at the speed it should be at. There are crises in other countries as well. And there's a stat here from Statista, if I'm pronouncing that right, where Ireland have eight on a table of 31 for taking in per thousand capita of refugees. There are 8 out of 31. Now, I know the other countries in Europe have crises as well, but something has to give. And causing tensions with people against people, that only ends one way, and that's a disaster.
Yeah, Christine. You'll hear a lot of talk about a whole of government approach to this issue. But I think, you know, speaking to people in Leinster House, that there is a common agreement there that they feel that Roderick O'Gorman's department is sinking in terms of trying to tackle this issue. You know, that's a minister that was dealing with, say, the mother and baby home issue. We've got the budget coming up where there's going to be probably a big push on childcare. That's under his remit. And, you know, it's no coincidence that the minister's sending letters out to other ministers to step up and give him a hand.
The last time Roderick O'Gorman was in here on this programme, I asked him about the burden of his brief. And he was insistent that he has the capacity to do what he has been asked to do.
Well, I think, you know, coming on national radio, and he's not going to drag the rest of his ministerial colleagues, but I think it's pretty pointed that when he has to send letters out publicly asking for more of a handout in terms of accommodation within their departments, planning issues on those rapid builds. Yes, constant promises about those coming on stream. They were meant to be last year, then it was meant to be this month. And now we have, yes, the student accommodation, 5,000 beds going to be used over the summer period, the second summer again. Yeah. And it's going to be like, you can, you know, count on us sitting back in here in the studio come September, as you say, and having families that have settled into those areas who have perhaps put their children into areas in and around the colleges. And it's going to be the same sort of, what are we going to do with those families?
Can I just come in there? Because I think, like, I don't think it's fair to characterise it as, you know, putting his hand out and looking for help. It's the normal course of events that you will say, we need some accommodation, and you go to the housing minister. But look, I mean, we're taking in 40,000 people with work permits into the country, mainly nurses, 60,000 students every year. So 15,000 international protection on top of that. It's not a massive number, and Minister O'Gorman is dealing with all of that, and there's no issues around the 40,000.
Yesterday there was the Cabinet Subcommittee on Ukraine, and speaking to people that were knowledgeable of that meeting were saying, look, this is a constant. We don't know where this is going to be. This is going to be a constant issue.
Absolutely.
There's no end to this. So, you know, landing it on one department who has an array of a long list of responsibilities.
Which is why it is also the duty of the Minister for Housing, and the duty there is to provide accommodation.
But do you think he's not doing enough to help your party colleague out, Roderick O'Gorman?
I think that it's a challenge right across government.
But you've mentioned the Department of Housing now twice in the context of helping with this.
I am absolutely not saying that they're not doing enough to help Minister O'Gorman. But it's not about helping. This is everybody doing their part. And I don't think it's more about a joint thinking, just to go back to the point, I don't believe that the lack of housing is down to the economic crash. I think it's a failure of previous governments that are now trying to be addressed. And so you can talk, you know, you can say, oh, you mention overnight, but
This has happened for a year, and we're dealing with a housing crisis that has been there for a couple of decades. And we can already see that housing is ramping up, and we have 400 to 500 people, new first-time buyers every week. So things are moving in a different direction. But of course, it is going to be an ongoing challenge.
I think the approach has been wrong.
But it's the right thing to do.
I think there's an ideological underpinning by the Green Party in relation to this. And, you know, the lack of consultation with communities has been a mistake. You know, the lack of a community dividend to especially working class communities who are struggling for resources.
There are dividends. They've already been paid out.
No, but hold on. 50 million euros was promised last Christmas. I put in a parliamentary question again in the last month to find out how much of that was actually spent. Zero has been spent of that community dividend so far. And now, like
2 weeks
now,
ago,
we're seeing in the nursing homes sector, which is fiercely under pressure at the moment. We see this decision by Minister Mary Butler to rescind the prevention of nursing homes.
Yeah, so they'll be allowed to transfer their business into a providing accommodation.
At the same time, we have an aging population.
Exactly.
At the same time.
And it's really important to look at the nursing home. Like right now, there are private nursing homes looking to get out of the Fair Deal situation. Right now, families are being left with a decision. Do they take their 90-year-old parent out, or do they pay the extra costs in that? We know that nursing homes are closing around the country. There's 900 nursing home beds have already been lost. The ESRI are telling us that we need twice the amount of nursing home beds by 2020.
But isn't there this 2-year cooling off period in between making that decision and actually transferring out of the nursing home business?
There is, but even in Mary Butler's letter to Roger Gorman, she admits that some of these nursing homes are doing it for the purpose of actually it being more financially beneficial for them to actually provide their accommodation for asylum seekers rather than older people in this country. And given what happens to older people in this country in the COVID crisis, we owe them a debt of responsibility in terms of making sure that they have proper, decent accommodation even after 2 years' time.
But you can't really lay the blame for that at the door of the nursing home operators.
That has to be a change to the Fair Deal. This is structure. Under the Fair Deal system, private nursing home are getting 70% less funding than the HSE at the moment. And it's actually incredible because the private nursing home spaces are closing, which means we need more public ones, which actually are costing more in the long run.
You had Ty Daly on a number of weeks ago talking about this very subject, and the notion that you're going to put refugees into nursing homes and the population is ageing at the same time is incredible.
Listen, I want to move on and talk about Eddie Wilson, who we'd on the programme. Dermot, you might start us off on this with your transport hat on, because the big issue that was coming through from the texters who were listening was the parking at Dublin Airport. Now, we know that the car parks are full and people have been told to get a lift to the airport, find another way to do it. Now, Eddie Wilson and Ryanair's suggestion is that the DAA opened some of the land that they have there, and then the DAA came back onto us and said we're not running a county fair here. Yeah. I mean, do you think that was a good solution put on the table by Ryanair?
Look, there's practical stuff, there's practicalities to that suggestion. Obviously, there has to be infrastructure put in place, but it's there's a few things here, if you don't mind. And first of all, the notion of a state body, the DAA, buying a car park for cars runs completely counter to the policy of government and the policy of the state, which is to reduce emissions by 51%. I don't understand that, right? The second part for me is that the same DAA have actually monetized public transport into the airport, because they're charging the coach firms that go in there. It's actually the biggest bus station in Europe, by the way, as we call it, because if you go to Dublin Airport, there's coaches everywhere. They pay millions to the DAA every single year. They pay millions. A lot of those coaches don't have low floors for people with disabilities, for example, but again, monetized. A railway into the airport, I believe, and I'm saying this quite clearly to government, anyone wants to listen to me, it's quite feasible. And don't talk to me about it, talk to the likes of Irish Rail Board, they'll tell you it's feasible. And this is how it's feasible, if I can tell you this. There's four tracks at the moment between Houston and Kildare. If you had four tracks between Colney and Malahide, for example, you have a sport to Clangriffin, that's your problem solved overnight. How much would it cost? Excuse me, up to 750 million it will cost. How long will it take to build it? 3 to 5 years.
So that's an your alternative railway. To the metro, which has been on the
Well, and that's an alternative, because I get lashed every time I talk against the metro. So the metro will probably be required in time as well. The capacity in the airport is rising all the time. It's going to be coming all time high in a few years' time, I believe. Hence the thought more Terminal 3 and all that kind of stuff. So certainly in terms of public transport, it is public transport. It's a service. It's a public service. It's not a cash cow, or should not be a cash cow for the DAA.
Christina, your plan, you hope to go to the airport soon, next week, is it?
Yeah, so it's
And how are you going to get there?
Yeah, well, I'm a Wicklow girl, but living in Meath in Paddy's constituency, so he probably knows some of the bus routes that go directly to Dublin Airport. But recently, and I think a lot of people, listeners, will probably vouch for this, when you're waiting to get a lot of bus services the last number of weeks and months, they're just not as reliable as they used to be. So
the ghost buses.
Yeah, like I've been waiting, you know, a good few times over the last couple of weeks to get Bus Éireann bus, you know, one particularly that goes in and near the airport, and, you know, might come every hour. So if you're planning to, you know, make sure that you get to the airport on time 2 hours before, you're getting a certain bus. But there's always that fear that you're just going to be sitting there and next thing you're going to have to hail a taxi on the side of the road and somehow scramble to get to the airport. And are you going to miss your flight then? And I just think that that trust both within the Dublin Airport and how it operates to get people in and out of there has been broken. I feel that, you know, the alternative for people and the only way they feel that they're definitely going to make their flight is to get into their car and drive to the airport and park. And once they do that, like I looked up how much that will cost if you're staying in the long-term car park to leave your car there for a week. I think it was nearly €135, which, you know, was probably on the cheap end in some of the other quotes if you're going
But it's full.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
Yeah,
that's, you know, even if you were willing to pay that.
So, you know, you're asking, you know, family members to
drop you off.
And it's
you
just...
The metro's going to take... Sorry, Christine. The metro, if it's ever built, is going to take 15 years from planning to operating. At least that length of time.
And your solution...
3 to 5 years. And that's coming not directly from me. You can check that with Irish
Rail. But I think what the Greens are saying about, you know, sustainable transport, get on public transport where you can. 100%. I think most people listening at home will say, that's no problem and it's going to cost me less. But the whole issue is the reliability of it is just not there.
And Pauline, it is hard to believe that we have these conversations still about getting to the airport. We've been having these conversations for 20 or more years.
You know, to be honest, I don't know anybody from Galway who wouldn't take a bus and who would drive. Like there's 34 buses a day just with one operator to Dublin Airport from Galway. And I do.
But that's great for Galway. Impacting every other
The whole point here is that lots of people do have the alternative and they're not using that alternative. And I think we do need to have an honest conversation. That there are 1,000 buses going into Dublin Airport every day.
Yeah. So diesel buses. Yeah.
I think you're steering the conversation now down a different route. We do need to have an honest conversation that more people do need to get on buses where they can. And I have heard people in Meath in particular talk about the reliability of that bus. But for the most part, most buses are reliable and will get you there on time. And as with anything else, if you're driving, you'd have to leave extra time as well.
There's
hundreds of thousands of people living in the commuter hell belt of this country at the moment who would actually agree that Christina is spot on, that there are so many drop services that they have lost confidence in buses. And, you know, even the Navan is one of the busiest bus routes into Dublin, and there's at least 10% of those buses are dropped because of the lack of staff that they have to run those. And of course, as was mentioned, there's still no rail line, you know, on that busy area. But I just want to bring the focus back a little bit, if I can, in that I do fear that we're entering into a city state in this country, and our spatial development is also focused on Dublin. And Dublin is overheating, and that's patently clear in terms of the capacity of the transport and the car parking spaces. We do have other airports in this country, in Cork, in Shannon and in Knock. And I do understand, obviously, the private air companies want to fly into Dublin because it suits them to do that. But we do start needing to significantly develop critical mass in other urban centres outside of Dublin to make sure that we have some kind of balance. In Denmark, for example, they chose another city by the name of Aarhus. They invested significantly in infrastructure in Aarhus to rebalance away from Copenhagen.
Agenda, which is that we will all have to fly less. So should we be investing in airports at all?
We will have to fly less. But what I'm saying is that there is existing capacity in Knock, in Shannon, and in Cork sweating those assets enough because we're still so focused on Dublin.
I totally agree with that point, which is why we're doing a rail link
into Shannon Airport and why we're linking up Foynes with the rail line, reopening lines. We are planning to reopen the line to Navan. And in relation to Metro,
You'll be retired by the time that happens in that plan.
But the previous governments, they knocked Metro on the head, and the Greens have now brought it back again. But of course, it is going to take time. But what I'm saying is that there are some people who can use a bus who don't use a bus. Let's be honest, you're a member
of a party that's in government. I'm saying quite clearly here, and I'm not putting you on the spot, obviously, but you can build a railway line into the airport between 3 to 5 years.
I love a train line, so you know, I'm not going to disagree.
But is it the case that you're not too bothered about the lack of parking at Dublin Airport because you'd rather people weren't flying away on their holidays?
I think people will always fly because we are an island nation, and I think we all need to fly a bit less, but we absolutely, I don't see a future for Ireland where people are not flying some of the time. Mm-hmm. I think that's the reality because,
But for necessary journeys, not for 4 days in Spain.
Well, I mean, people will want to go on holidays as well, and we're certainly not against that. I mean, we're practical and pragmatic about it.
The premise of your question is really important, I think, that there is an ideological approach to this to a certain extent, I think, from the Greens in terms of capacity in Dublin. It's also in terms of the toll increase that we're seeing at the moment on the M50. You know, again, there's an ideological reason why that was allowed. You know,
this was the one that was delayed for 6 months, and now it's coming into effect.
So, like, the M50 tolls are a monument to maladministration by numerous governments in this country. They were built for £58 million. They were in the private company that built them. In the first year of their tolls, they paid the full cost of them. They then sold it to the state for €600 million. This state has taken €1.3 billion on tolls on that M50, and now this government are increasing those tolls again. We have paid for those tolls dozens of times at this stage. The idea in the middle of a cost of living crisis that a government would actually hike up those tolls on people who, again, who have no choice but to use those, this is a tax on work. It's a tax on commuters.
If you're coming from Navan into Dublin City Centre, you've got two of them.
If you're working in Kells and you're working in Talla, you will pay €2,500 in tolls on an annual basis.
If you choose to drive.
But you don't really have a choice if you're taking that journey, because there's no public transport solution for that journey.
And Pauline, do you support the increase in tolls happening now?
I mean, this was a cost of living measure. That was the cost of living measure. And we can't simply, delay everything forever. Inflation has come down. So
Why not scrap them?
Inflation has come down. I think that's a bigger conversation, and that has to be around actually having a look at where the funding is coming for our infrastructure.
You believe in progressive tax, don't you?
And ultimately, if you use a bus, you pay for it. If you use a road, there is an element which...
There's the ideological underpinning of that decision.
I don't accept that at all. I think
but your car tax pays for the road.
That's what we're told for many, many years.
I think that everybody accepted, everybody knew at the time that this was for a limited period of time.
Yeah, Christina wants to come in there.
I don't think it's a coincidence that the dole is off, toll charges come in, and there's no doubt about it. It's going to be a hot topic, I think, when the dole returns, because I think it is that one issue that, whether you're a commuter or not, it just really, irritates people, particularly when the price is going up. And constantly, even when, this charge was delayed, the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar was asked about scrapping toll charges. Like, how did we get into a situation where operators are making massive profit when we paid for this infrastructure years ago? And there's always that sort of, I think you mentioned there yourself, the bigger conversation. That would be a bigger issue to tackle. That'll be a difficulty to go into the contracts. Oh, we'd have to, we might have a look at that sometime, but it's never the time.
Yeah.
Like, it never seems to be the time.
Listen, we haven't got much time left, but I just want to touch on this because it's been a topic of discussion for the last couple of weeks, including this week with Pascal Donoghue here, and we were talking about the warnings from the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council on the government making a decision to cut taxes. And how does the Green Party feel about this, Pauline? IFAC says, don't do it.
I mean, I think that any time taxes come up, it's obviously people would rather have less of their money going in taxes, but really, our tax system has time and time again been shown to be one of the fairest in the world, and that it is progressive. And so, you know, we believe that taxes should be used for the public good.
So when Fine Gael say in the lead up to the budget, we still want to cut tax in the same way as we did when we wrote about it in the op-ed in the Irish Independent, the Green Party are going to be saying, hang on a second.
I think I personally think that it was way too premature for them to come out and make those kind of statements.
And cheeky?
And cheaky, to be honest, and cheeky.
They're speaking to their base. Yeah. Let's be honest.
Mm. Well, you know, that's their own business. I can't say what goes on behind closed doors.
It's your
in
business
relation
as well. Because these are partners, you know.
And we believe that we should certainly be investing more in social welfare and investing more in those who really do need it. And that we, you know, so all along over the last couple of years, what the government has done is take a balanced approach, universal payments to try and support people through what was a cost of living crisis. Okay. Inflation is coming down now, but also putting in measures for those who really needed it, you know, one parent families and so on.
The drumbeat, Christine, on cutting taxes is getting a bit louder early on in the cycle.
Yeah, it's probably one of the earliest times we've seen some kite flying about the budget that'll be in October. But look, the fact is that the programme for government does indicate that there will be an indexation of taxes. So I don't see particularly this government, when they're coming into, you know, the second half of their term, that they're going to start reining things in, you know, head to an election.
I think rather than targeting special social groups like Fine Gael, we're speaking to their base. I mean, you should look at the USC. I mean, the USC came in at a time when we had a crisis. Okay. We don't have a crisis now.
There has to be some relief for people. Absolutely. In terms of USC, especially for
fair
the lower
and balanced.
Okay, and that's a whole other conversation, which we will have on another day. We have to finish, though, there. We'll take a break before the end.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
And that's it from us for the week. Thank you very much to the team here on the programme. And remember, you can catch up with anything you might have missed on the RTE Radio app. Today's programme was produced by Deirdre Lyon, researched by Kieran Dunn. Stephen Higgins was our broadcast coordinator. Tommy O'Sullivan was on sound. The series producer is Alistair McConnell. Have a lovely weekend. It's over to Louise.